From Hanselminutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 258, recorded live Wednesday, March 23rd, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Controls, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott gets the latest on Entity Framework with Jeff Durstadt and Tom Laverty.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. And today I'm talking with Jeff Durstadt, who is a dev lead on Entity Framework 4.1, and the guy who makes coffee for him, Tim Laverty, who is the lead PM. How's it going, guys?
Great.
Good. Hi, Scott.
Have you had your coffee made by your boss today, Jeff?
Yeah, he actually made me hot chocolate this morning. So it was pretty cute.
Oh, that's nice. Okay, so you guys work on the team that makes the Entity Framework, and the Entity Framework is it fair to say it's the way that the recommended way to do data access in .NET today?
Yep, absolutely. That's the way we see it too. If you're doing data access in .NET, you should be using the Entity Framework.
Mm-hmm. Now, a couple years ago, let's say maybe like 2 or 3 years ago, there were maybe more options, and some of these options still exist. Like, for example, Link to SQL is still out there. It's not being actively worked on, but it's shipped, it's supported, it's there. And then there's ADO.NET, kind of classic record sets and data sets and data readers and things like that. And then Entity Framework. How did it shake out that Entity Framework is the recommended way, and why were there so many ways before?
So this is Tim. I would say that, for one, the first thing I'd start with is Jeff and my team, we own Link to SQL. I think really how it shakes out is we still see a world where you would use CoreIDO.NET. If you're looking at very, very tight control of SQL statements that execute against your database, then we oftentimes will push people down to CoreIDO.NET. With Link to SQL, really it was a matter of us looking at the EDM vision and looking at the mapping capabilities that EF offered, and sort of a balance of, well, which of these are we going to bet on and add to, or add a large feature set to going forward. And we felt like that EF had a better path in terms of where we wanted to go with data access and modeling, and what was the more effective and cheaper solution for Microsoft.
And you said EDM vision. What is EDM?
So EDM is the entity data model. And it's a basically a way that, or a standard that you can design your entities and relationships between those entities, and offers a good way of mapping those to relational schemas.
Okay, so then everything that you're doing in Entity Framework, whether it's from a model that's done in a visual designer or whether it's done in code, there's an underlying EDM, entity data model. Is that right?
Yeah, there is. And what it allows us to do is I can create I'll build an EF app, and I'll get an entity data model underneath that. Because it's an entity data model, it makes it really, really easy for me to use other services. For example, I can build, or very easily build, an OData service on top of that because the EF model is EDM-based. And what we picture is going forward that we'll add other services across Microsoft that are EDM-based as well, mm-hmm. so that you can build this EDM model and get a first-class ORM through EF, get a OData service very easily, and et cetera.
Yeah, so this mm-hmm. is Jeff, just to add on to that. So what this means is, anybody who's using Code First or using the designer to build a data access stack with the Entity Framework today, down the road, they'll be able to, leverage that existing work that they've done to build that model, whether they've built the model using code or, with the drag and drop stuff in the designer. You'll be able to do reporting over that, analytics, all kinds of cool services for free.
I see. So it's not like, it's not three different things, like three different, totally different code paths. I mean, model first, database first, and code first, they all sit on top of the core Entity Framework thing. It's not like three separate
Yep, that's right. If you look at inside Visual Studio, the designer produces these XML format and EDMX, and you can open that file up and see all the XML, and that kind of represents this EDM model. Now that XML then gets interpreted, you know, by the Entity Framework, and we use that as kind of our internal model. Now, what Code First does is it basically generates the equivalent of that XML, but it does it at runtime. So no matter what you're using, same code path, same kind of model.
Okay, so the XML is just a serialized form that represents what you want to do. And in memory, it's some kind of an object model that represents your entity model.
Yeah, that's right.
Like XML, I guess I'm just saying is the XML file is an artifact of the larger in-memory model, right? It's not based on XML or anything.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. You can think of it as it's serializing that EDM model out to XML.
Okay. Now, a couple of years ago, though, when there were these choices, the original Entity Framework, I think it did it come out in .NET 3.5 or 3.5 SP1?
3.5 SP1.
Some people really embraced it, and there were some cool books and stuff, like by Julie Lerman, but amongst folks that were already using features like open source projects, rather, like in Hibernate, there was a lack of confidence in Entity Framework, and there were some initial features that they didn't feel that it had. What did the public like and not like about 3.5, and what is different in 4.1?
I think what the public liked about 3.5 was really that you could do some of the modeling that wasn't possible with some of these other technologies. So you could do, you know, different kinds of inheritance mappings, you know, different kinds of like splitting tables or joining tables together to represent entities in a very kind of seamless way. The original version of Entity Framework, we also made a really big investment in the designer experience so that, you know, tools like and Hibernate, you know, which is a great tool, has tons of functionality, but it didn't at that time have the designer support that was in Visual Studio. And so that was kind of an advantage of using the Entity Framework. Link to SQL, on the other hand, had the advantage of simplicity. It went to one backend, SQL Server family of technologies, had a really simple programming experience, and really just hit that, like, I'm a developer writing code and I'm trying to get, you know, an ORM-based data access stack up and running. And Link to SQL offered the fastest path to do that over the Entity Framework. It also offered, you know, a form of what we call POCO support. So you could write your classes and they would not have any dependency on that data access stack. And that was something the first version of Entity Framework didn't have. And I think that was one of the most significant feature gaps between Entity Framework and the other solutions that really kind of held it back. And so when we released the second version of the Entity Framework in .NET 4.0, we added the POCO support back. Well, we added some POCO support for the first time. And then coupled with the designer support, really made a really nice solution for people.
Mm-hmm. For me, when Entity Framework 3.5 came out, I was kind of a hardcore Link to SQL person. And I would use Link to SQL in all my demos, and I would just... Link to SQL felt faster. It felt like the designer was faster, and it felt like it started up faster in 3.5. And in 4.0, it seemed like I could pretty much do everything I did with Link to SQL in 4.0, and I can't really tell a difference between the designer and the startup. It felt like it started up slowly in 3.5. Is that just in my mind? Did I get a faster machine, or was there something done between 3.5 and 4 to get that kind of out of the box? You know, it's like, file new model, boom, 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 hit F5, and I'm running. I mean, it felt more, I don't know, crisp, I guess.
I mean, we definitely, between 3.5 and 4.0, that was kind of when we started making that transition to investing, you know, primarily in the Entity Framework. So, you know, we did do, you know, work on that experience of, you know, I want to get started using the Entity Framework, and I want it to be fast and, you know, as well as feature rich. And so it's likely that, you know, you're seeing some of those improvements that we made there, whereas we didn't make improvements to, you know, SQL Metal and the Link to SQL Designer. But I think also, like, you know, the other thing that people liked about Link to SQL was you said it kind of like felt faster and stuff like that. I think even like the development workflow felt faster with Link to SQL because the concepts that you were using were a lot simpler. There were a lot fewer of them. You didn't have this this extra layer of mapping and modeling in there. You could use attributes on your classes and things like that. So there definitely was a simpler feel to link to SQL, even though it kind of seemed like it could do similar things in a lot of cases. But the truth of the matter is that the Entity Framework, you know, definitely offers more in terms of object relational mapping technology, and the different layers that are in the Entity Framework is a much more robust, richer experience or piece of technology. And so that's where when we started working on EF4.1, we said, well, one of the things people liked about these other technologies is they're simple and few concepts. So let's target that kind of experience when we start thinking about the next versions of the Entity Framework.
The only other thing I was going to say perf-wise is that we do, with every release, we set aside or we block off specific time to look at perf in terms of our startup, also in terms of the SQL that we generate that we execute into the database both. And we definitely did that with EF4 and plan to do it going forward.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that that I've found is that because it's so simple, I end up using Entity Framework like I did with Link to SQL in a one-to-one relationship. So, you know, when I do database first, where I design my database and then I drag my tables in and automatically get my model, or if I do code first, I'm finding that my model to database kind of mapping is one-to-one. And I'm feeling a little bit guilty about that. I'm wondering if I'm really only scratching the surface of what's possible. And usually it's because of confusion, maybe perhaps on my part, about let's say I have like a customer model, but the customer model actually has two or three tables, customer, customer info, customer address. I'm not really clear how that mapping works from an insert perspective. Like I can visualize from a reading perspective that I've got this customer object and I'm going to go and get one, and the entity framework will go and map how these three tables are in fact one object, and that's nice. But on the insert, how does it know, and how do I write code to have one customer object fan out to multiple tables? I think that's a question a lot of people have.
So it partly depends on, this is really about initial model creation. If I want to have one entity or one class that's mapping to multiple tables, then when you create your model, you specify to EF what properties map to what specific columns and what specific tables. And in terms of generation of CUD statements or generation of read statements, you're basically using the same logic. Like EF is looking at that entity, it's looking at its mapping layer and saying, okay, well, how do the properties in this entity map to which tables and which columns in those tables? And it's generating the CRUD statements based off of that. And it has the intelligence to walk through what the dependencies are and so on, so that it executes the statements in terms of order. So I guess what I'm after is like the bonus with EF is that you can actually create that kind of mapping if you want to take those three tables and map them to a single entity, where with some of the other technologies you can't.
Mm. I've heard a lot as I've presented EF Entity Framework related talks at small user groups and stuff that some of the database folks out there are uncomfortable. These database guys that kind of grew up in that space. When I was programming in the early and mid 90s and doing stuff on like SQL 4.2.1, it was a very clear delineation between the three tiers and the three job titles, right? There was like old database guy with a beard or lady with a beard. There was like UI guy who was the button dragger. That was me. And then there was the I don't know how to do the UI guy, and he wrote the services in the middle, the COM objects in the middle. And the database guy, you know, his job security was based on, you know, he knew everything there was to know about the database. He added special index columns, and he wrote custom sprocs and everything like that. And then I hear now that, maybe that guy's not needed. Where do you think those roles evolve to? Should the database guy start learning EF and move up, or should the coder move down into the database?
Huh. This is funny. So I have a EF for DBAs talk in Orlando next week that I'm doing. So I've been thinking a lot about this. And I come from I didn't have a beard, but I was a database guy before coming to Microsoft. So we actually don't see the database guy becoming irrelevant, if you will. EF works great in a DBA-centric workflow as well. Like, it works well with stored procedures. It works well with views. If you're in a shop where you're stored procedure-oriented and you want that abstraction layer, you want to have a buffer from the developer in terms of to handle security, or you want to specifically tune queries, then we definitely recommend that you continue to use stored procs. You write your stored procs in those specific cases, or you write your views, and they'll map through EF just fine. So we think of it as EF works well for your shop, and it's sort of independent of what your shop workflow is. Like, it'll basically be able to click in and offer you benefit, whether you're where you have very segmented roles, the database guy with the beard, your middle tier and your front end guy, or whether you know, you're a guy that wraps all of that up.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools in the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying Agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself. Get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TELERIK, Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us. Yeah, I guess that when I think about the database guy with the beard, in an enterprise, it seems like the bigger the company, the more likely there is to have a dedicated person that does that. And I've heard from the community, from the public, kind of these two conflicting statements. One is that Entity Framework is only for big enterprises, and that's one statement. And then the conflicting one is, no, we're way too big for Entity Framework. You know, our database is so big, or it's so important, or our company is so big that, you know, we can't use it because we have a gajillion tables and all custom, you know, custom sprocs. How do I reconcile those?
I think the way that you reconcile them is they're both not true. So Entity Framework can be used for, if you're not an enterprise, you're just getting started with a greenfield application, you want to build a model using code or with the designer, have us generate a database for you just so you can start writing your actual application. And there's no that, you know, Entity Framework is going to help facilitate getting all your data stored in a database for you. So we work kind of on that end of things. And on the enterprise side, you know, we do scale up to fairly large models, and we have the flexibility to do complex mappings that you often see in shops that have, you know, pretty large, complicated database schemas. And that's where kind of some of that extra power and flexibility of the Entity Framework's mapping comes into play. I think we have release after release, we're getting better on our SQL generation. And from what I've seen about, you know, DBAs being like, you know, the gatekeeper of NoSQL shall enter, you know, my database, you know, without my express written, you know, TPH report kind of thing. You know, I think in those cases, I've seen the developers be like, all right, well, I've used Entity Framework. Here's some of the SQL it generates. They show it to the DBA, and the DBA is like, hey, yeah, this isn't bad. This is pretty good SQL. And, you know, in fact, it's probably just as good as, you know, a person could write, you know, in a reasonable amount of time. And, you know, Entity Framework even offers the ability, you know, if you don't like the SQL that's generated for a link statement, you can always kind of have the, you know, option of dropping down and having Entity Framework execute your own SQL for you. So in that regard, you know, Entity Framework is pretty well used in enterprise scenarios and by enterprise customers.
One of the things that I've heard as a negative about Entity Framework is that it's unclear how to do things like caching and, you know, second level caching. I've heard that that as it relates to nHibernate, which has kind of caching baked in. Is that, I mean, what do you think about that?
No, it's good criticism. I mean, we still have a number of features that are on our backlog that aren't in the product yet. Mm-hmm. We don't have a first class, second level cache or a caching provider model. We look at nHibernate and admire it. Something that we want to build and plan to have in a future release for sure.
Tim, when people say, why doesn't Microsoft just use this existing open source project? And I don't mean that just in the context of Entity Framework, but kind of anything that we do. Why do we, as a company, you know, build something versus, you know, pick something in the community? I know that sometimes we do, in the case of like jQuery and jQuery UI on the web side. But how are those decisions made? Let's you know, build versus buy or build versus support in the community.
I think that it varies on from technology to technology. That it depends on licensing and how much IP we have in the space already, and how much we want to innovate there. Like, do we think that we could build something that's, you know, significantly better than what's there, and so on.
Mm-hmm. And Entity Framework is going to be, I mean, supported for forever in the sense of this is the way we're doing things going forward. So you're planning on moving forward, you know, EF 4.1 just came out and there'll be like a 5 and a 6. So we're not going to switch database models again?
We have absolutely no plans to switch database models or to switch data access APIs again. We have a funny acronym called YADA, yet another data access layer. We don't plan on having a fully different data access layer. EF should be it. I mean, with EF, it's a strategic bet for Microsoft. It's based off of the EDM model. We're building a number of services on top of it. You know, EF's your ORM. You have data services or OData built on top of it. We plan on shipping others as well.
Mm-hmm. And you guys, when you're supportive of people using whatever they like, right? I mean, Entity Framework uses ADO.NET underneath. nHibernate will end up using, you know, going direct to SQL depending on what providers they're using underneath. Do you care? I mean, ultimately, we're trying to sell Windows. So does it matter to you whether someone uses EF versus nHibernate versus whatever, LLBL gen?
I mean, not particularly. Like, it is the .NET ecosystem, and that's what we're about. I mean, we have EF because we think that it's a great ORM, and it feeds this EDM ecosystem nicely and makes it really easy for you to build OData services and other services on top of it. It's got great VS integration and so on.
Mm-hmm.
We've got a lot of chips on it. We're betting a lot on it. But yeah, I mean, in reality, it's like we're here to enhance and build on the EDM ecosystem, or sorry, on the .NET ecosystem. And, you know, these other technologies are great as well.
Mm-hmm. So in 4.1, is it correct to say that EF 4.0 ship with .NET 4, but EF 4.1 is its own thing. It's an add-on. Is it a replacement, or does it sit on top of the stuff that shipped in 4.0?
It is an add-on on top. So EF 4.1 is our first out-of-box release. It's the first time we've shipped outside of the .NET framework, which we're super excited about because our thinking is it's going to allow us to iterate quicker. So we've got a huge backlog of asks. You referenced second-level cache, just one earlier. And what we feel like is that what this is going to let us do is it's going to let us iterate and ship out of box on a more consistent, rapid cadence. EF4.1 doesn't replace EF4. It's a layer on top of it. It adds code first and the DB context API surface.
Mm-hmm. Were you guys influenced by the ASP.NET team and MVC shipping out of band? Or was it, you know, like, I kind of felt like at Microsoft, the culture wasn't really supportive of doing things, as we say, out of band, meaning doing things now and shipping things now as opposed to waiting for the next version of Visual Studio. And I feel like, you know, the guys on the MVC team really started, I don't know, innovating in the sense of, we can do something, we don't have to wait for you, Visual Studio. Or is that something that kind of was invented on both sides?
No, I think that they were definitely a model for us. And, you know, exactly around like, hey, we want to be able to ship more frequently, get the features to the customers more, you know, as quick as we can. Were all goals of ours, and we saw what they were doing and said, hey, we should do that too. You know, to give the MVC and, you know, ASP.NET team credit, and you, Scott, you know, we got a lot of feedback from them, not just about how to ship the bits, but about the content of the bits and the functionality. So we actually, think of our relationship with MVC and ASP.NET as a pretty successful one in terms of getting out, you know, a pretty good product that people seem to be pretty happy with.
Yeah, I mean, just to add to that, we've got a good tight partnership with the ASP.NET guys. Like, they, you know, they look at our code, they critique us, they've brought a lot of new ideas to us, saying, "Hey, we think you guys should do this," or like they've looked at our stuff and given us a fair bit of feedback and criticism about making it simpler, making it easier, and certainly from a ship perspective, we've learned a lot from them, and they're a good model for us. Of, I mean, we're doing things a little bit different than they are naturally, but they've been a good model for us to learn from, of, you know, shipping stuff out of band and on a quicker cadence. So yeah.
Yeah, I actually, whenever we ship a new like CTP of especially the code first stuff, I always look forward to in the next couple days getting a mail from you, Scott, or David Ebo, or Phil Hack about, you know, why the heck did you do it this way? You know, this is ridiculous. Like, you got to change this. That always kind of gives me a little smile when I get feedback from you guys. And I call it the mocking feedback, because you like to make fun of the silly choices we make in our CTPs.
It's so funny that Microsoft people, I don't know if it's like a Microsoft culture thing, or if we're like trained, or maybe it's the Kool-Aid to take our criticism like, "Please, sir, can I have another?" You know, it's just like, "You suck. Why did you name it DB database? What kind of freakish class name is that? You guys are smoking over there." "Oh, thanks. I'll take that ask to the team. I'm super excited about your feedback." You know.
Exactly.
Take your licks and keep going.
Right.
when I think it was CTP4 or CTP5 came out, it was like, I mean, it wasn't literally, but it was like Microsoft Database Access Entity Framework Community Technology Preview 4 or whatever. And it was just such a ridiculously long name. And so on my blog, I think it was like 3 a.m. and I was in a weird mood or whatever. And I was like, "I reject this name. I reject it. And I now declare that the Entity Framework is the Magic Unicorn Edition." When you guys woke up the next morning, were you mad? Because I was just being silly. I didn't know it would become like a thing.
I think we thought it was hilarious, and it's to the point where we filled a guy's office full of inflatable unicorns when he went on vacation once, and we've got little unicorn crossing signs in our hallways now. And when the EF401 T-shirt comes out, it's called the Magic Unicorn Edition.
That's awesome. That's awesome. I was making sure that I was still cool with you guys.
it's pretty good. People really liked that, and it's actually a rallying point in a way.
Oh, that's cool. That's cool. Back to the thing about shipping out of band. It seems like there's more and more stuff coming out. You thinking of you guys, Entity Framework, and MVC, and also SQL Compact, where we're not necessarily having to install stuff. Like, you could, but with NuGet and the package management, I can go and get SQL Compact Edition, EF 4.1, MVC scaffolding, and things like that, and I'm bringing them down at a project level where I use the term Lego pieces. I've been talking about this for a couple of months now, the idea that suddenly the Legos are the right size. You know, like, a Lego that I have to run an MSI on is not a good Lego. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But
yeah, we love NuGet.
Was it a design, a conscious decision to make things so pluggable like that?
Certainly. Like, we when we saw NuGet, it made us really excited, just because we'd built this piece, EF4.1, that sat very nicely on top of EF4.0. And we saw NuGet as a really great way of, you know, delivering it. Not only it's like you walk into a project, it's really, really simple just to drop your Lego piece, if you will, into that project. So yeah, I mean, when we saw it, we were super excited, just because we thought it fit so well with what we were doing.
Mm. The fact that MVC and you guys both use T4 templates for code generation and stuff, and I guess, is it true that you guys support plugging in your own T4 templates to generate classes pretty much any way you want?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah.
Is that a coincidence?
Or you can edit
how
ours.
Did you guys get into the whole T4 thing?
T4, this was one of the big criticisms of what we did in our initial release in 3.5 SP1 was that the code that we generated, not only couldn't write Poco classes, but you couldn't really change what we were generating for you from a code gen perspective. So this is one of our big ads in EF4 actually was, hey, you know, you can write your Poco classes, but you can also just completely take over and do whatever code gen you want. We ship a few code generation strategies in the box. And then we also use Extension Manager to ship a few others, like I think our Poco template is on Extension Manager as well. And we've pretty consistently seen people, you know, take our templates and tweak them for their domain, for whatever naming convention they have, or in some cases I've seen shops where they've got a business object layer already, so they have specific base classes and interfaces that they're using, and they'll change our T4 templates to use their stuff. So they'll take ours and alter them, and we think it's great. So just T4 in general, we're super excited about it. We think it's great, and you know we see people consistently using it to, you know, alter our code gen and take over, which is awesome.
Yeah, I'm trying to get the T4 guys to realize that this is a big deal, and that T4 needs to have syntax highlighting, and you know I think some people are a little bit afraid to bet the farm on T4. Because it seems like a small thing, but when you open the file up in Visual Studio, it gives you a sense of like, should I be here? This is, am I supposed
That's
to be
a
here?
Great world.
And yeah, it's just a little bit scary. You know, I mean, maybe that just kind of underlies the whole kind of joke about how my .NET programmers are useless unless they've got, you know, drag and drop support inside of Visual Studio. But every time I open a T4 template and I don't get, like, someone doesn't hold my hand, I'm a little bit like, oh, yikes. Oh, am I supposed to, you know, I've opened a door and I shouldn't have done that.
There's actually a pretty nice little Visual Studio add-in from a company called Tangible, the Tangible T4 editor, which gives you the syntax highlighting, and you can tell, like, what's code that's going to be output versus what's code that's running to help run the template. That helps a lot. It avoids the bottle of Advil syndrome that you get from working on templates.
Yeah, we should buy them or something. I don't know. I guess this would be a good example of the kind of thing where we could solve a problem by, going out there in the community and bringing something in. But yeah, we should all keep putting pressure on them, because it's all because we love T4, not because we're picking on the team.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So how do we get EF? We can go into NuGet, and it's called Entity Framework is the package. You guys changed the name a little bit. So I just say install package Entity Framework. Is there also an MSI or something I should install on my system?
Yeah, you can get you don't have to. Like, you can use NuGet, and you'll get what you need. Like, it builds on top of EF4, so if you have NetFX 4 installed, then you can use NuGet, and you've got what you need, and you just go to town. You can go get our MSI if you want a Gacket, and that's off of the MSDN Download Center. That'll also give you our DB context generation for model first and database first workflows.
Cool. So I don't have to put anything in the GAC or run an MSI if I don't want to, but if I do, then I can go and get the installer.
That's right.
All right, very cool. And we just published, I think we're in the process of publishing an Entity Framework Code First tutorial on the ASP.NET website, and I'll add a link to that on the show. And there's lots of different Code First tutorials that are out there, so people can try each of the different modeling styles, database first, model first, or code first. And I guess we're going to be doing some demos of this at Mix too, so people will be able to get as much of this as they can handle.
Awesome.
Yeah, awesome.
Thanks, guys. I really appreciate your time. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes. We'll see you again next week.